Blog Talk Radio.
There are seven wonders of the universe. You're about to hear the eighth. Welcome to Sports in Depth on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, with your host, award-winning journalist and commentator, the legendary Doc Stanley. You have time,
gentlemen, no, not this time, please rise for the national anthem, performed by film and recording artist Nona Gay in a special duet with her late father, Marvin Gaye.
And God Radio Network. And we open every show with a prayer. John Coltrane, dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you, Lord, for little things we so largely take for granted. We thank you for blessings forthcoming, have come, and all unmerited. We ask you, Lord, that you not give us what we want, what we need, and we need thee every hour. But our beloved family says the Thanksgiving season comes about. Every day is Thanksgiving, every day is Christmas. So we thank you. A man once said, although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. A lady once said, you're God all by yourself. I am, I am. That's my beloved family here in the USA and Brazil, the panel and all their family. I just want to once again thank you, Lord, for your daughters and Jesus. He gave us a right, then we had the right to the tree of life. We ask these blessings and all the blessings Amen. Amen. Donald in Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trust in God Radio Network, opened up with Donnie Hathaway this Christmas. And then that was the national anthem. In fact, that was the first time I had Big C had got that national anthem edition for me. Do it with the late Marvin Gaye and his daughter Donna. Yeah, it's a big thing. Marvin had done the 1983 NBA All-Star Game. I never heard a better national anthem introduction. And with that, we will go to our own Mel Cosell Smith Jr., who will introduce you all once again to the Sports in Depth Nation. Rooney, take it away.
Thank you, good doctor. The Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. The straw that stirred the drink is here. That indeed is the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
Thank you, Rooney. And the words can be applied to all my panel. Incomparable, uncompromising, and the best there is. Thanks so much for that great introduction. Doc Stanley, Sports and Up on the Trust in God Network, Radio Network, as Rooney says. It is a Saturday. Cincinnati C will be calling in from St. Louis, where we'll be talking about the NFL. A host of things as we look toward our leaderboard today, as we'd like to say. We'll be talking about Mike Ditka, heart attack or whatever. Cincinnati C will let us know. Eddie Murray gave me a call today. The great Eddie Murray, the greatest coach in the history of baseball. It was an early call, too, because it's like 9-something here. It's about 7-6 up there. And he was raving. Raves and showed a lot of admiration for Andre Barna, who tonight will take his 24-0 record with 20 knockouts against Antonio DeMarco, 28-2 in one knockout, as he fights for the lightweight championship of the world. It is said that Barna is so reminiscent of Floyd Mayweather, except that he's Mayweather with a punch. Knicks fall from the undefeated ranks. They lost last night for the first time. Once again, got behind big, made a run, cut it to 8, but it was way too late to the Knicks. The last team in NBA to lose a game, but they're still ripping and a roaring. And we will talk about the Jets, who will be playing tomorrow, trying to get back on the winning track. David Price, Cy Young Award winner in the American League, and R.A. Dickey, without question, merited in the National League. One of the things that got me, I had read this article about where Jason Verlander at 17-8 really should have been the Cy Young Award winner. And I'm looking at the stats. I mean, Verlander pitched 27 more innings. 27 more innings he pitched, okay? So that's equivalent to nowadays. Heck, that's like 4 more games. So if he's all that good, he should have been 21-8. But we found that Price, if you look at the record, he won 3 more games in Verlander and lost 3 less games. And here's the bottom line. He had a better ERA. And they're talking about Verlander. I thought without question Verlander should not have gotten the MVP last year. Give him the Cy Young, no problem, no question about it. But these things, and me and Eddie talked a little bit about that, how they were looking in a lot of ways to find a way not to give the MVP to Cabrera, the Triple Crown winner. I mean, they were trying to find, you know, they were talking about this and that. Same thing with Verlander. You know, the Price team didn't make it into the playoffs. And what's the guy to do? The guy won 3 more games in Verlander, lost 3 less games in Verlander, and had a lower ERA. That's the bottom line. He had a lower ERA, so you can blame the team on some wins. He had a lower ERA and won 20 games in an era that's going to be very, very tough to do again. I mean, 300 wins is out. And then the thing with Cabrera, 41. Ted Williams hits 400, don't get the MVP. 42, he wins the Triple Crown, doesn't get it. And won the Triple Crown again in 47 and didn't get it. And you just look at these constant little interjections of a combination of lunacy, stupidity, and always racism. I mean, how could the guy be the Triple Crown winner and not get the MVP? And here's a guy who won 20 games. Okay, his team was a viable team, making a shot at playoffs all year long. But more importantly, against Verlander, the guy had a lower ERA, won 3 more games, lost 3 less games, and pitched 27 less innings. So let's say for all intents and purposes, he wins 3 more games. That's 23 wins. And even if he loses 3 more games, he still won 3 more games in Verlander. But as often things change, they remain the same. Dusty, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing where it, all of a sudden they're picking the wrong guy. You know,
right.
And it's always
no,
the wrong guy.
They got their own agenda on how to pick
mm-hmm.
the guy, what they want to do. The fact of the matter is that you could have a team in the basement and have a pitcher that wins 30 games, 5 no-hitters, 6 one-hitters, and the team remains in the basement, but he is a Cy Young winner and
mm-hmm.
with a short ERA. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't matter that the team got to the playoffs. After the season is over, the playoffs and the series, the championship games are a new season. It's that
mm-hmm.
162-game season that gives the pitcher the credentials to be in contention for the Cy Young and nothing else. So I don't know what their terminology is of deciding who should win or who should not win. The same thing with Carrera. The Carrera had everything on top. I mean, he tore the league up.
And that's not only that, Dusty. Not only that, his team won the division. So
yeah.
He is the best player on the best team in his division.
Exactly. And they got to the series, of course, and they were blanked out for nothing, but still and all. The, like I say, my argument, unless somebody shoots me down, is the 162-game season. And that's what he did. And that's what
yeah.
he did to merit that was it, that triple crown thing. Nothing else. Playoffs are a different season. I mean, well, you
mm-hmm.
know, like in any sports game. I mean, he had all. Show me a better credentials than he during the season of any.
And you know what's amazing,
Dusty?
He was the guy that when we had George Forster on, that made, remember Forster said he was the guy that was reminded him of himself. He was
yeah.
the guy that was reminiscent. Remember that was the guy
exactly.
he
yeah.
talked about. Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, that. Doc Stanley Sports and Depth on the Trust and God Radio Network. Let's go to St. Louis. Cincinnati C is here with us. J-E-T is Jet.
Bring me a T-shirt that says Cincinnati, New York City
Debo.
Fire
Department. Debo. Debo.
Listen, I may just have to... good afternoon. Good afternoon to you guys on the East Coast.
How
it's still
doing?
Morning time here in St. Louis.
Hello, St. Louis.
The gateway to the West. Dusty, I could probably
yeah.
bring you a fire shirt back. What I'll do, I'll take a regular white T-shirt. I'll take it with me to the game because I think the Jets are going to get burned tomorrow. And there you go with your fireman's T-shirt.
Wow.
Don't forget the barrel. Don't forget the barrel, okay?
Psychologically, he's starting to lose it here. You know what I mean? Psychologically, he started real quickly, though. Let's get to a big report that Cincinnati C that Mike Ditka, former NFL great tight end.
Yeah.
Like he's the guy who broke all the records. You know, as a tight end, you know, he was the first tight end to get over 1,000 yards in one season. Over 100 catches, and then became a great coach of a Super Bowl championship team. Word is he had a heart attack. What's the story with that?
Yeah.
Well, Hall of Famer Mike Ditka, former NFL coach,
right.
suffered a minor stroke on Friday at a suburban country club in Chicago where he was playing cards, where he suffered a stroke. He's going to be okay. He's on the road to recovery. He's not obviously going to host ESPN's NFL Live. We wish him the best.
Sunday, yeah.
He coaches from 82 to 92. He hasn't had any significant health issues since suffering, as we know, the heart attack on November 2nd, 1988, after his loss to the New England Patriots. We can't say that loss brought on a heart attack. But we wish the best to Mike Ditka and his family, him to a speedy and full recovery.
Yeah, that's scary. That's scary when it happens a second time. That means the man has not really recovered.
Dusty, he's not been doing the things he needs to do to make sure it doesn't happen
exactly.
again.
Exactly. And, you know,
right.
plus the fact that he is a recognized panelist, and these guys are always on the go, traveling from city to city, so how much rest how much is he really taking care of himself? It reminds me of the late Emmanuel Stewart, who was busy taking care of everybody and may have neglected himself and his health. Because when he came down with that, I forgot the name of the scientific name of the
illness. Yeah, you told me the name. But what, as it turned out, Harold Weston, what it was, the initial inception of his whole thing, I think we got Julio Pabon back with us again. Julio, that you?
Nah, this is Muscles, guy. What's up?
Oh, we got Cisco Kid.
Hey, Super
okay.
Muscles, ¿qué pasa, mi
hijo? What's up, papa?
What happened with the thing with Emmanuel is that the family didn't want to seem to let it be known that it was cancer. And I remember Harold was
they
the one that told us that. Right, there you go. Yeah, and Harold kept saying, hey, it's a lot more serious than what is projected, and it's not what it has projected to be. And as it turned out to be, it was cancer, and it's been a while. Real quickly, Hoopsa, let's get to you, and we're going to come on, we're going to do a lot of boxing here. It's a big fight tonight at AC in a lot of ways. Hoopsa, okay, the Knicks lost last night, second night in a row where they got down in double figures. This time they cut the lead, they couldn't do it. They're no longer undefeated.
Well, I can tell you why they're not undefeated. The referees wouldn't blow that whistle. That's what it was.
Really?
That's right, really.
Didn't they implode themselves with three technicals? And
yes, they did. It threw them off their game. Once you get a technical, that throws you off your game and your rhythm. They were, they was an end of the game.
They came back, though.
They didn't have enough.
Was that enough?
Rasheed
Wallace was a little weak,
Doctor.
Technical on
Rasheed. You know what happened? Rasheed got a technical. He was playing good. He dropped 13 points. He played good. For a long time, you got to give it to him.
Well, I mean, this is what Rooney said. I mean, there's two things that you never lose sight of. There's always an anti-New York sentiment. You know what I mean? And this is a league that is high populace of African-American players. You know, you can just throw it to one. I mean, it's just crazy. You know, but you look at, I remember Minnie Rudolph used to be the only referee that would call a foul on a Boston playoff in Boston Guards. And it seemed like when you had one or just two referees, the games were officiated a lot better. I mean, you got about 10 guys out there in the court. Half the time they miss a call, and they make these kind of calls you said last night, these technicals. I mean, it depends on who you are, where you play, you can do this and that. And it's ridiculous that it's such a big difference in playing a home game and an away game. Unless, I remember that great line, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Michael Jordan were taking the picture, and Bird kind of leaned close to Mike, and Magic told Larry, "Watch out, Mike. You know, you don't get too close. Now you can't touch Michael." Everybody started laughing. Hoopsa, looking at the Nets now, because they playing some good. Everybody's talking about the Knicks. Nets are playing some good basketball. Now the thing that New Yorkers are worried about, this Knicks team, you know, the other guy hasn't played. Now the question is, the way the Knicks are playing, it looks like he has to take a whole different approach. Question one, are the Knicks legit? They're going to make the playoffs, but how good are they? Can they really challenge Miami for the NBA championship?
Yeah, sure they can, yeah. They got experience, they got veterans, yeah, they got a good chance.
Well, didn't they beat Miami recently?
The first game.
The first game. Even though it was not a test, it shows that the Knicks are gelling together. They're rounding the fences and are doing. And ironically enough, they're doing it without Stoudemire.
And the other guard
who's out too.
Yeah,
the other guard is really not this. I mean, Stoudemire is the guy. Here's the guy who was the workhorse, the guy who was the franchise player a couple of years ago till Melo came. I think he has to look around and see now that he has to come from a whole different perspective. And I think I said last year, if you remember, Hoopsa, I thought he was better coming off the bench anyway. I mean, he has what you call concrete slabs for hands. I agree with that.
When you look at it, too, the Knicks beat a lot of the teams that out-rebounded them.
Yeah.
They were out-rebounded by all of the teams, I believe, that they beat.
Yeah, good job, Steve, yeah.
Believe it or not,
Jason Kidd is going to be destroying that drink. Melo's going to get the big points. But it's a whole lot is going to have to do with Kidd and his ball distribution.
Yeah,
keeping people happy with the shot
down there. Well, Kidd has been one of the great passers in this game. And you know, the year he was with the Nets, they robbed him that first year. And you know what was sad? Was Kidd unequivocally was the MVP of the league. He comes to the Nets, a doormat team, takes him to the NBA Finals. And I remember talking to a sports writer, and he was justifying that the MVP it went to the forward out the great Tim Duncan in San Antonio, and he was justifying the fact that, well, you know, Tim plays the toughest powerful another team. I'm like, who you do? What do you tell? You know, sometimes, you know, there's some of us in positions there because we have our pigmentation, but we don't have our mindset. And I'm listening to this guy. I said, what are you talking about? There's no way in the world you're not going to tell me that night in, night out, that you're sticking Bird on Dr. J, and you're sticking Malone on Derek Coleman. And you say, come on. I mean, Kidd was blatant. And this was a New York writer. Kidd was unquestionably the most valuable.
And
you look at the kind of game that he played. Here's the guys on some nights, Kidd would have 7 points, and the Nets were blowing somebody out because he had the assists. He rebounded for you. It's just like you talked about it. Just because I rebound you don't mean, you know, I'm going to win. Because if I shoot 50% from the floor, you're not getting that many rebounds anyway, and those you're getting you can have. So sometimes stats sometimes can play. You know, it's like Dusty said, we talked about this thing here with the Cy Young Award. You know, they can play the numbers game the way they want. Never forget the year that Ricky Henderson won the MVP, and they talked about what a great year. I'm being redundant. Cecil Field ahead, and how close it was. Something was too. There's two schools of thought here. You guys voted. So what the hell are you talking about? It's like here. Like, white America keeps talking about Obama. Well, you know, it's the white vote that put Obama in. Now, right. The next year, Cal Ripken won the MVP on a second division team. Field had the same kind of year he had the previous year, but not one word about how what an injustice was that Cal Ripken won MVP on a team that wasn't going nowhere. Okay, I mean,
exactly.
Understand. If Ripken hit 482, okay, but you didn't hear it. You didn't hear the nice about how close it was. I mean, Ricky Henderson almost won the batting championship, and I remember George Brett got ahead of Ricky and sat down. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the things they talked about, the great Joseph Paul DiMaggio. He won the batting title. He was hitting close to 400, but he's having some eye problems. And he went to McCarthy and said, you know, Joe, I think I maybe ought to rest a little bit. And McCarthy told him to show you the mindset of ignorance. He said, well, you know, Joe, you don't want to win the title. They call you a cheese champion. You know, but it's just a whole different mindset. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Trust in God.
Hey,
Sunday
Doc, I got more information, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Hoopsa. NBA.
Yeah, well, we also want all the panel want to congratulate Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He finally got a statue at the Staples Center, finally. He got a statue. We want to congratulate him.
Wow, good for him. God bless.
He got a statue out there in front with Magic Johnson. But also, they should have more people out there, like your friend, Elgin Baylor should have a statue.
Oh, my God, Elgin Baylor.
How does Elgin Baylor not have a statue? And you talk about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. As all you people know that I am a retired police officer, I'm proud, the greatest police department in the world, the number one police department, the training police department. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's father was a lieutenant. And anything that Kareem documents, he always proudly makes note that his dad was a lieutenant in the Transit Police Department. And when I was getting my paperwork done to go to Brazil, and we got to get a hold of, got to let Rosie know we're back on. One of the gentlemen that had the notarizer, we were talking, and he alluded me to the fact that Kareem's dad was a great trumpet player. A lot of people, he said, thought that he went the wrong way. He could have been a professional trumpet player of renown.
He's a jazz man.
Of renown. And the last time I saw Lou, because you always call it, hey, Lou, it was the Jabbar was down at LIU playing, coaching against his son in a minor league basketball game, you know, looking to elevate to the pros. And I asked him, Cap, how's your dad doing? He's right over there. And that's the last time I saw him. He passed about 4 years ago. And that's another thing, too. It's always amazing how the great athletes, the great black athletes in every major sport never get the opportunity to coach or manage. It's just, you know, it's like this mindset of look at the World Series, like Brochy and Leland. Now, Leland never made the pros. Leland never played in the major leagues. And Brochy was a lifetime 239 hitter. And these guys are seen as elite managers. So, but what about a guy like Willie Randolph, who's the only second, right. never made an error in postseason play? Chris Chambliss, okay. You look for every Dusty Baker, there's 10 Jim Leland. You look at the history of the game. You know, where were the GM jobs first? Elgin Baylor, Oscar Robertson, Walt Frazier. Remember the great story that Marion Boykin wrote, Marion B. Boykin, black, audacious, brilliant brother. And when the Nets were looking for somebody, and he did a great story. He said, why not Clyde? And I remember being in the press room and showing this story to Clyde, and I showed it to another writer. And he looked at it, he said, oh, Clyde. He said, Clyde wouldn't want to coach. And Clyde said, why would I want to coach? He said, Clyde,
one of the greatest Knicks players of all time.
Well, not only that, I mean, the thing was, I remember I talked to Ernie Gunford. He said, Clyde's a broadcaster. I'm thinking, well, weren't you a broadcaster? I mean, didn't you lead the broadcast booth to become general manager? Didn't you lead the broadcast booth to make more money? Didn't you lead the broadcast booth for more prestige? Yeah, it's amazing how these people think. You know, he just, like for years, people, me and Willie Randolph talked about that. You know, Willie, people under the mindset that Willie didn't want to leave the Yankees.
No.
Why would you not want to elevate and be the chief? I remember when Bill White became the president of the National League, and one of the rumors that was going around that White had taken less money to take this position of so-called prestige, and Bill said, "No, why would I take less money? You know, come on. I'm not, if I'm better off at an Indian, why should I be a chief without all the increments that come with a chief?" So, you just look how Jabbar. I mean, tremendous question. Where the hell is this statue for Elgin Baylor? Is the greatest all-around player that ever played the game of basketball. 27 points a game, 13 rebounds a game. Where's the statue for Elgin Baylor?
How about Will Chamberlain, Doc?
Hey, that's my next move. Dipper. I mean, where's Dipper? Dipper. Only him and Bill Russell averaged 20 rebounds career-wise.
Well, some of the Lakers players should be all to have statues. The ones who play with Chamberlain should have statues. West should have one, too, definitely.
Who's that?
Jerry West.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's another great player. Well, I guess the statue move is late. I mean, you know, the thing that's sad about America, the great line that Billie Holly once said, you know, in America, you know, you're not famous till you're dead. So then when the guy dies, then you get this tremendous stories, boom, boom, boom. You know, it's just crazy. At least Baltimore, I like Baltimore. Eddie had his statue, Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken Jr., Palmer, all those guys had this statue. You know, that great line that the Honorable Susan Mendoza, the future congresswoman and elected official up here, but she said, you know, one hand, one rose in the hand of the living is worth more than countless wreaths on a grave. And it just, you know, you just look at that and you look at some of these. But you know what the problem is, too, Poops, it's the change of organization. I remember Julius Erving. Julius got a lifetime contract with the Sixers. And then I remember, I had about a year or two before retirement. We were someplace. Hey, Jewel, I said, man, I'm going to retire in a couple of years, man. So, yeah, I may be looking for a job down there in Philly. And he said, Mel, he said, you know, when the new ownership came in, my lifetime contract was terminated. Could you believe that?
Wow.
Could you believe Julius Erving's lifetime contract was terminated? And that's why he wound up going down to Atlanta. But could you believe that?
I didn't believe that.
Yeah, I mean, stunning. Lifetime contract was turned. How can you not? I mean, that's why the Nets. How do you let a guy like Julius Erving forget about the way he can play the game of basketball? That kind of human being, you know, it's just sad touch. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk some more, gentlemen. Just give me a second here. There's a little quick commercial get in here for you. And Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. It's a Saturday wrap. Jets will be playing tomorrow, looking to finally get back in the winning column. Giants are off this weekend as they are in their bye week. Mike Ditka is all right. Heart attack is not what happened, but he is convalescing. Will not be the course tomorrow and the on his TV show. Big fight tonight. Adrian Broner. We'll talk more about him with Cisco and Dusty. Looking for Harold Weston Jr. to join us. He's in assignment too. Big fight down Atlantic City to a certain degree. He's Mayweather with a punch. Study Hall, formerly Block Talk Radio 101. Study Hall is the interactive question and answer session brought to you by Block Talk Radio University to answer general host questions. It's geared to both new and veteran hosts. So join us live every Wednesday on Block Talk Radio at 1 o'clock for question and answers, including visual demonstrations, or listen to the archives of the audio recordings at your leisure. Once again, every week here on Wednesday, Study Hall, formerly Block Talk Radio 101. And that's here. We're here every day for you, depending on the time and what the situation is. Hoopster.
Oh, I got one more thing to say also. 21 years today, in November, after Magic Johnson made the announcement of the retirement of the virus. 21 years ago, on November 9th, 1991.
You know, I remember, and that was just before Thanksgiving. There were people, I mean, Kathy Gamble, who I know she's not a sports fan, but everybody had heard about that, and they were sad. I mean, Magic is such a tremendous human being. I remember,
nice guy you ever meet.
Oh, man, I remember the last time the Nets were playing the Lakers for an NBA championship out at the out in Jersey. And I see him come in. I say, "Hey, Irvin, how you doing?" I go over and give him, "How you doing?" I said, "Irvin, man, can I get an autograph?" He says, "Man, every time I see you, you ask for an autograph." I said, "Well, Irvin, I don't see you all the time." He looked at me and smiled. He said, "Man, if you didn't ask me, I'd be disappointed." You know, and just a great, great human being.
He's the nicest guy you ever meet. Down
yeah,
a humble guy.
Before you move on from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I just wanted to throw in mostly kind of little known fact that, well, a lot of people do know, but the same token, he is not only an accomplished martial artist, but one of the earliest students of the late, great Bruce Lee. He was working on Lee's last film, The Game of Death, at the time of Bruce Lee's death, actually, when he passed away during the making of that film. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, as anyone who's seen that film, is actually in that film, has a starring role as an accomplished martial artist, and again, one of the earliest students of the late, great Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee, Okado from the old Green.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Jabbar had an extensive
that movie, Game of Death, wasn't even a movie. It was something that Bruce was putting together, and he flew Kareem down to do some scenes with him, but and actually not sure if it was going to be a movie or not. He was trying to impress Hollywood, so he was trying to just create something himself. So Game of Death, the movie, was actually created after his death with some of those scenes that he had done.
Well, they finished the movie with an actual double of Lee, because he passed during the, you know, as you said, he had done some scenes and the movie. It was actually finished with a double. If you see the angles of
how they used it,
you can see that it's actually not, you know, Bruce.
Yeah, but
there's actually
a lot more scenes that they never even showed. They only showed 15 minutes in that movie. There's actually a lot more scenes that Bruce Lee had filmed that were never shown, because they didn't know where he was going with this. You understand? There's a lot more scenes, outside scenes that he did, more martial arts scenes that he did that were never shown. So, no one knows if what he was gonna go with this.
It's amazing that you guys are talking about that, because he in the process of filming died, and his son, in the same way in that movie, The Crow.
The reason why he didn't finish that, you know, whatever he was doing with that, with the whole Game of Death scenes or whatever, wasn't because of his death. He had stopped filming because he went to film Enter the Dragon. You understand?
He was filming those
scenes before Enter the Dragon, and then he was asked to film Enter the Dragon, and that's when he stopped filming. He died after the filming of Enter the Dragon. He almost died actually during the filming of Enter the Dragon. He collapsed.
Really?
He collapsed in a they found him collapsed in a restroom or whatever. He had he eventually died of, which was swelling of the brain. But, you know, 2 months later, actually before, after the collapse, 2 months later, he was found, he died. So, he died of the same thing that he was hospitalized for.
32 years old.
So,
wow.
Yeah, 32 years old.
What's that on the Trust in God Radio Network? And ladies and gentlemen, this is why you there's so much that you learn, not only from sports, but from life. Can't Touch the Crew, the Cisco Kid, the Daniel Baby Lewis, Harold Weston Jr., Mel Cole, Sal Smith Jr., Lady A, Nate B, Baseball Burger, the Hoopster, Lewis Hart, and Cincinnati Sea Wings. hey, you know, it don't get any better than this. Yeah, you hear me redundantly, but the pride that I have, and you know, it's to others I am somebody. These are the people who make Sports and Death and make me. I mean, where else can you tune in and listen to this kind of insight and this kind of in-depth, informative knowledge? And that's what it's all about, trying to learn something every day. And here, you don't learn something every day, you learn something every minute. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Trust in God Radio Network. It is a Saturday show. We'll be back tomorrow with our late-night wrap of our Sunday show, but we've got the crew all in here today. We got the hoops, a little basketball. And, see, we need to get back to you because we're going to box in a minute. Okay, now what's the story? What's the feeling? Give us the late. Sean Green supposedly had said some things about Tebow Green. As we got our press notes, we want to thank Bruce and Jared and the lovely Megan Gilmore, always sending our notes. We want to thank them. Happy birthday across the globe to people having birthday. So good to be my man, Mary. But Sean said he didn't say that. Didn't nothing about a quarterback. And he said, I didn't even know I supposedly had said something until I was tweeted. And this, again, is the constant problem that athletes have with not only the media, but the New York City media. And once again, I tell this story redundantly of Terry Pendleton saying, hey, you know what? I took $500,000 less to go to the Braves to come to the Yankees. Dave Righetti, there is no finer human being walking the earth than Dave Righetti. Don Mattingly, for my money, the greatest Yankee first baseman ever. And both these guys told me that, you know, New York is already gone. I mean, I remember Chuck Knobloch as he was walking out the door, and as I just glided behind him, he must have asked him, he was running away not to speak to the press. And Don and Dave said, you know, in New York City, if Dutch is hitting .427, yeah, but he's hitting .311 with men in scoring position. If Cisco's won his last seven games, yeah, but you know, he's given him 5 home runs. You know, if Rooney has relieved and had 8 straight saves, yeah, but you know, he gave a 4. The New York City is always finding a negative spin, especially if
but don't you remember George Forster complaining to us when we indeed had him on your esteemed show? George Forster complaining to us about his private battles with the New York media?
I remember Hank Aaron. I remember, you know, when Hank became this big figure and was in suit to surpass Babe, you know, the question came up when he started talking about black issues, like, well, where's Hank Aaron been all the time with this kind of stuff? Hank said, I've been saying it all the time, but it didn't mean nothing to you until I became the big focus. Now all of a sudden, you know, you listen to me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And it's a great line here when blacks and Hispanics sit up and talk about things. But I say, oh, it's not the time for that. Oh, you pay. Hey, it's always the right time to do the right thing. You know, and just, you know, it's just simply, how I say in some cases, you know, when they come out, it's just sad and touching. Knicks lost
last
night.
Well, Doc, before you go on, you remember the late, great author George Rush Jr. telling us, speaking about how much heat he caught when he mentioned that the quickness in which the Mets couldn't make wait to break up that championship 86 team. Couldn't wait to get rid of a Kevin Mitchell and company.
Yeah, well, and David Johnson was livid behind it. David Johnson was saddened behind it. And David Johnson, as you know, wasn't too far gone. You look at that team. World. They call him World because he could play everything. You had good. You had Strawberry. You had a host of great players. And with the infiltration of the African American, September 1st, 1971, the first time you ever had an all-black team. Danny Murtaugh, the International Baseball Internet Writers of America, they're putting him on the ballot for induction to the Hall of Fame. As you know, we picked, and Dusty's a member of that too, Cy Young Award winner David Price, congratulations to him, and also to R.A. Dickey. And when you talk about Cy Young, you got to talk about the great Sandy Koufax. Dick, as we said, is going to be all right. Graded here for my man Eddie Murray, Miguel Cabrera. I mean, how's a guy win a triple crown and has to sweat out win MVP? But if you're Ted Williams, it happened to you twice and you didn't get it, and you hit 400, so that's all you need to know. Gentlemen, we sliding down last time with you, Cincinnati C. We were talking about the other day. It seems that Peyton Manning is the guy. If things go, not only is Denver going to get to the playoffs, but right now he's the
dark horse,
front runner. Front run. Now you're Doc Austin. He's the front runner for MVP.
Yeah. So far,
yeah.
He's
probably the most comeback player.
Yeah, comeback player.
I mean, Peyton Manning, he just never fails to amaze you. I mean, the guy, I mean, I used to turn on, besides watching the Jets, I couldn't wait to watch an Indianapolis Colts game, because if you gave Peyton Manning, you know how 10-10 win says, if you give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world. You give him 50, 60 seconds, he'll give you a touchdown. He's just unbelievable. He's unbelievable. 69% completion rate. 21 touchdowns, 108.0 quarterback rating. He's thrown for 2,700 yards already. The guy's phenomenal. And then next game, they're hosting the Chargers. So I give that another win. The Chargers are definitely a team that you're going to see, besides the Jets, they're going to be rebuilding too, and the Philadelphia Eagles. But Peyton Manning, I mean, this guy, he's the reason to watch football now. I mean, the guy is just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
When you talk about San Diego, you got to talk about Irv Turner. I mean, he's got to be, in the words of Marvin Gaye's song, he's not doggone, he's long gone. They know when he's gone, right?
Well, you know how they say turn out the lights, light a candle?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to turn out the lights with him, and there's no candle to light. He's done. He's toast. Put butt on him. He's going to get fired. Andy Reid is gone. You're going to see the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to get fired. And I tell you this to the Sports and Death panel, to the Sports and Death Nation, you're going to see these guys gone. You're going to see these guys gone. And even now, Tannenbaum is saying that he doesn't feel that his job is in jeopardy. But I don't think you'll see anyone actually say to the media that they feel that their job is in jeopardy.
You won't have
never seen that.
Rooney, did you hear that? Did you hear that?
Well, like I almost fell off the chair when he said it, Doc.
No,
he just said that. I almost fell off the chair.
Yeah.
I mean,
everybody's going to talk about, well, I don't think my job is in jeopardy. That's a safe face. I mean, they'll say anything.
You got a point there, Dusty. You got a point there.
Yeah.
And the thing about Tannenbaum, what we've said before, we talked about that before. Fox Stanley Sports and Death on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. You know, the thing about in the past, and I talked about it, I've said it here on the blog, or incidentally, DocStanleySports.com, that's the site for the Trust and Guard Sports Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame, DocStanleySports.com. Also, hit the blogger, Doc Stanley Sports in Depth, blogspot.com.biz. I've said it before, and when you talk about the Jets, even in the past 2 or 3 years, you always talk about what Ryan didn't do. You always talk about what the defense didn't do. You always talk about what the offenses didn't do. You always talk about what Sanchez didn't do. You always talked about the San Antonio. But nobody ever mentioned this guy, Tannenbaum. And, you know, I mean, even now, you hardly hear his name. And this is a guy that has to be – he's got to be the number one guy you point the finger at, C-Wings.
He should be calling on a carpet. I mean, just the talent that this guy got. But you're going to see, I'm telling you, after this season, you're going to see a lot of changes. There are upwards of between 9 and 11 players that are up. Bart Scott, Sean Green.
Don't be surprised Rex Ryan, too. He might be out of a job.
I think he might get a reprieve this year. I think Rex Ryan might get a reprieve. I mean, even Sanchez, you look when he had the pieces of the puzzle, they did well. They did well for a rookie coach and a rookie quarterback. They did well when they had the pieces. You can put Peyton Manning. You could put Tom Brady. You could put Phillip Rivers. You could put all of these quarterbacks on the Jets, and I guarantee you they'll struggle. They do not have anyone that's a Pro Bowl-type player that's playing on the offense. It's definitely not Sean Green out of Iowa. He's not an impact player. Yes, he did make over 1,000 yards last season. This guy, if he can get his mojo back for when they played the Indianapolis Colts, he ran like he did when they played the Cincinnati Bengals. He ran like they did when they played the San Diego Chargers that year when they went to the AFC Championship. We need impact players on the offense. The defense is not bad.
The thing about Sanchez, in my humble opinion, C and distinguished panel, is this. Now, as Cincinnati C was saying, if you surround him with the type of talent that you surrounded him with the first 2 years, meaning running back, receivers, tight ends, people that he can go to, weapons, if you will. He is the type of guy who can manage a game for you, meaning don't turn the ball over, don't throw the big interception, don't have the big fumble, things like that. Don't blow the game, in other words, okay? He's not the type of guy that's going to be able to carry a ball club on his back. He's not the type of quarterback that makes everybody around him better. He will be able to manage a game with the proper talent, but he's not the type of guy that will be able to pick up a squad and then carry a team on his back. He's not the type of quarterback.
Sanchez's problem, first, last, and always, is the shadow of Tebow on him like a cheap suit. That's what it is.
I don't think it's Tebow.
They should not have brought him in here. The dude is shaking in his boots every time he makes a move. You gotta study what the hell this guy is doing, knowing that he has a shadow of Tebow on his back. They didn't bring this sucker in here, he would have been a better quarterback. It would have been more confident. He's not confident because he knows he's replacement material. And everybody in the stands sometimes are yelling and praising when Tebow comes to play. I mean that could shatter anybody, whether it's a fighter or a basketball player, whether it's a baseball player, whether it's a hockey player. It could shatter any athlete that has been hired to be the prime time person. I mean, this is what the hell is going on here. The Jets are in total disarray because of that stupid move.
I don't think, you know, first of all, you have to have a certain air of confidence. Supposedly, the Tebow coming thing was going to push Sanchez to the level that he's supposed to have been at. But that means, in retrospect,
push them
backwards. Yeah, but either you can play, you can't play. It's like speed. Either you're fast or you're not fast. You can't obtain speed. You have it or you don't have it.
Or you don't.
Now the thing with Sanchez, you know, what he has and that has, he has been horrible. Not bad. He has been horrible.
Since Tebow came on board, I don't
tell me, you know, it's like that cancer in the clubhouse. Two-spectrum bullshit, you know. Dusty's is a cancer in the clubhouse. Dusty's hitting 379.
That's right, I am.
He's hitting 39 home runs.
I'm a cancer in sports and depth.
You know, you're a cancer.
Sanchez,
you know, you're a cancer here, but all you do is bring knowledge and intellect. All you do is digest and read everything day and night. All you do is speak two languages perfectly, but you're a cancer on sports and depth. That kills me.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't like Dusty so much that when I go to the place, I'm going to ground out. I never forget this writer. And it just showed me, and I could that we can. So, and Art Rush talks about the fact that he had him on the show, the late, great Art Rush, and had this guy on the show, and a fan called in and said, you know what? I always know you didn't know anything, and now you prove it. This guy told me he would never vote for Jim Rice as a Hall of Famer.
Wow.
Because Jim Rice always played for himself. And I'm thinking, how the hell do you hit a two-run home run and you're screwing the team? I don't understand. How do you win 20 games a year and you're holding the team back? I'm befuddled. I mean, if you don't like the guy, say it. But, you know, how do you tell me that when you come to play, yeah, I'm playing. I'm trying to get a base hit for me. But you know what? I knocked in Dusty and Sea Wings, who are up 4-2. And, you know, it's the mindset of some of these people.
What does that mean, Doc? He played for himself.
Dusty, I'm still trying to figure out how do you play for yourself? I'd rather have 10 guys hitting 340 playing for themselves than, you know, it's like that old nonsense. You know, Dusty doesn't bring anything to the team. He's a lifetime 300 hitter. He's got 500 home runs, but, you know, he doesn't help the team. But my man Rex over there, who's been traded 8 times, okay, 8 times, he's a 242 hitter, but he brings something special to the team. What is he bringing, cocaine? You know, that's not special. I mean, you know, the book. What's the book on baseball? Okay, I got Dusty at the plate. Okay, Dusty is a right-handed batter. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to bring in Sea Wings to pitch to Dusty, because I got a man on third base. But hold on, wait a minute. Dusty's hitting 407 against Sea Wings. So why don't I bring in the left-handed Rooney, who's hitting 027 against? Well, Dusty Baker said, he's not going to go by the book. You know, if Doc Stanley's hitting 400 against this guy, I let Doc hit. I don't bring a left-handed pitcher in the pitcher, left-handed batter, bunt off this guy. But, you know, it's all about – that's why I always say baseball don't start in 1947, okay? Don't think – and incidentally about baseball tonight, good buddy Brian Hunter has his screening of Universal Babe. We talked about it. We had him on the show. Babe, who did so much for the African-American baseball players back in the day, who was an anti-Nazi movement, and who was not that buffooned, happy, hot dog, beer-drinking, smoking, women-chaser that people portrayed to be. And I've always found in our society that when white America doesn't like a white athlete, he's either a first-class asshole or he's a first-class positive guy that happens to have a lot of things going for him. One of the things he has going for him that he's not a racist like the rest of the drumbeat of America that goes by. And I've met so many guys, and when you meet them, no, he's not like that. And you see why they don't like it, because they're not like them. But it's that great line in the Bible. Jesus Christ said to Christians, if the world didn't like me, how are they going to like you? If the world didn't like me, how are they going to like you? You ain't, I mean, you look at it, you ain't perfect, but so, you know. Doc Stanley Sports It Up on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's time to talk a little boxing. Dusty and Cisco Kid here. Okay, now Cisco, we're going to start with you. We got this kid. Then what I going to do? Let me get this out the way one more time. Hold on, gang. Anybody move? Hold on. One more time. Study Hall, formerly Block Talk Radio 101. City Hall is an interactive question and answer session brought to you by Blog Talk Radio University. To answer general host questions, it's geared to both new and veteran hosts. Join us live every Wednesday for question and answers, including visual demonstrations, or listen to the archives audio recordings at your leisure. And if you listen to stuff one more time, DocStanleySports.com, that's where you can take a look into the sport in depth with us in God Hall of Fame, and also Doc Stanley Sports in Depth blog spot. Also, we have a lot of boxing on there. Also, you know, Dusty has a Latin boxing column on my blog, and I'd like down the line to get C-Wing to do some football for me and Cisco some Latin boxing, as well as you, Rooney, keep us up on the having the WWF. So, that's all. Doc Stanley's sportsindepthblogspot.com.br, and Doc Stanley Sports. .com is the site for the Trust in God Sports and Depth Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame. I want to thank Big C for getting that national anthem in there for us, as well as all the music we have. Big C has put it in for us, so we're going to take a quick ride and say C.
Push the T.
Thank you, baby.
Cut.
Okay. Now, we got a couple of things, too. You know, Cisco, you wasn't with us. And we just want a quick reflection one more time on your thoughts and memories of Emmanuel Stewart. And then, hold it. Is Harold Weston with us?
I think yeah.
Harold, that's okay. Harold came in. We'll go with Perfect then join us. Cisco, your thoughts on Emmanuel Stewart, and then we're going to go with you, Dusty, and Harold on this young man tonight and talk some boxing. But reflection on the great Emmanuel Stewart, Cisco.
I think he's probably the last of the Mohicans, you know, the last great trainer out of all the great trainers in boxing today. I mean, you might have a handful of trainers that are good, but none of them had the knowledge, the experience, the ability to create fighters and make fighters better than Emmanuel Stewart. Emmanuel Stewart knew the game inside and out. He's trained more champions than I'm pretty sure any trainer in the history of the sport. The guy had a great deal of knowledge. He actually told me himself that he was the one responsible for creating mitts for all this pad work that you see today. He said he started it, and I actually have a video of it on YouTube. He said he started it by taking gloves and flipping them to the padded side, and he actually was doing this with Tommy Hearns. He says what you see today with the fancy pad work is not actually teaching. He feels that the shortage of trainers is the reason why fighters don't look as good as they used to. He says he was actually trying to start from what he told me, some seminars to teach trainers across the United States, you know, to get guys more involved and to teach trainers how to teach, because he says that most trainers don't know how to teach. And you know, he, like I said, he's going to be the missing puzzle in boxing today. And you know, he's going to be missed because this was a huge impact. I think a big impact in boxing. It shows. Everybody's pretty much saddened by his loss.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you also talk about the fact that he always had time to talk to you, because I know he talked to you, he talked to me, he wasn't too busy to answer some unknown media person like me a question, and he would evaluate and take apart and digest a training portion. You know, I kept asking him, what are you going to do in 8 short weeks to build up Miguel Cotto? I said, I'm not going to change his style. I'm just going to correct the mistakes that he's been making. And sure enough, you saw the proof, a brand new born-again Cotto, and you reform him in a born-again Cotto with Mayorga. But then again, when I told you that, Doc, that his Cotto's biggest mistake was not contracting Stewart to fight Mayweather. Maybe the things would have been different. I don't know. I'm not saying that it would have, but maybe because of the fact that Cotto went back to his rhythm of dancing and prancing and switching over left side and right side, he started doing that with Margarito. This is why I the missing 10th round is the one that I missed the most, to see if he had really changed. But Margarito started to get to him and smack him because he was leaning up against the ropes, which Emmanuel Stewart never let him do that. So
Pedro Diaz does not have the knowledge that that Emmanuel Stewart had. He says it himself.
He just made his pro debut with Cotto, and he was training the Cuban team, you know, all over the place. So, you cannot call Emmanuel Stewart a trainer. You got to call him a teacher, or teacher/trainer, because
he taught you the game.
He took diamonds in the rough, like Lennox Lewis is in the Kitchcliff brothers. I mean, this is why we lost the heavyweight title in New York. It's in Europe, because he took those animals and built them into unbeatable animals, so to speak. But this is the way the man was. He was a teacher, and he would get to you mentally, emotionally, psychologically. He would take in stragglers like Andy Lee, and they would live in his home, and he would cook for the guys in training camp, because he wanted complete control and make sure that they had the right nutrition. I mean, this is amazing, and this is a guy who has a bantamweight, had 93 fights, only 94 fights and only 3 losses, and pulled away from the Olympics just so he can train kids. He never fought pro. And what is amazing is here's a guy who developed knockout monsters like the Tommy Hearns, who was a natural, but he himself was not a knockout puncher. He had the finesse of beating you. But he harnessed all that talent too.
From what I know, he wasn't even that good of an amateur.
he was international Golden Glove champ and had a shot at the Olympics. Oh yeah, read his bio. And he decided.
No, I'm not
to
talking about
train.
Emmanuel.
Yeah.
About yeah. Tommy Hearns.
Oh, about Tommy. Yeah. Hearns. Oh, well, but however he was, he developed an animal.
Yeah, well,
that is funny. No, I'm just going to say quickly that, you know, it's funny that Dusty should mention Lennox Lewis and the great Emmanuel Stewart in the same breath. I remember having a in-depth discussion with Emmanuel
about Lennox Lewis. You're talking. I keep popping in my mind that you talked about how go ahead, Harry. You talked about how Emmanuel said if Lennox fought the way in the ring in a fight the way he fought in the gym, but Harold dovetailed on that with the fact that it was a simple situation that Lennox felt comfortable in the gym against his sparring partners, and he knew they weren't going to do the things that the opposition was going to do when the real fight was going on. I think there were guys,
his exact
Harold,
words
who,
to me, Doc,
who,
his exact words to me was that the world had yet to see the best Lennox Lewis, precisely because of what Howard had just said. He said, you know, the guy's really relaxed in the gym, and the gym, he's an absolute monster. He's like, when he's having a real fight, I have to beg him to throw the jab. I have to beg him to throw the right hand. I have to beg him to throw the right hand.
Well, you know,
but this is
Lewis.
Exactly what he said, what Emmanuel Stewart said when he took over Lennox Lewis after Lennox Lewis got knocked out by Oliver McCall. I'm going to take him into the gym, and I'm going to give him a jab, and I'm going to give him a left hook, and I'm going to give him a right hand, and I'm going to teach him the proper way to fight. That's basically what it was.
What everybody is saying is validate.
Lennox Lewis kind of reminded you like of his stature of Mitch Blood Green, but he was a better boxer. I mean, if you put the two together.
Hold on, Wings. That's a good one because Mitch Blood Green, I heard, was really good. How good was Mitch? Is that true? Was Lennox a better boxer than Mitch, or had Mitch Green stayed focused, got the right kind of guy? How good could he have been, Harold?
Well, Mitch was a very good fighter. The problem with Mitch was that he had no discipline. And when you have no discipline, there's nothing you can do with a guy. But Mitch had all the tools of being a great heavyweight. I mean, one thing he had,
absolutely.
I mean, he had fast hands, Mitch can punch, and Mitch had a hell of a chin. You know, but his whole thing, he just didn't have no discipline, and that was his downfall. But Mitch had good – he had better boxing skills than Lennox Lewis.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, much better boxing skill. He was more groomed as a heavyweight than Lennox Lewis was. And so that's what
he was more heavyweight?
I think he had a longer reach too. That's why
he had a big heart too. I mean, he wasn't no coward. I mean, he would fight anybody. I mean, the thing was, like I said, he had no discipline. You couldn't keep him in the gym. And then he gets arrogant. He don't want to listen to the training. He wants to do things his way. I mean,
he was a celebrity.
That was his whole downfall.
Yeah. After he finished the gym, he'd go out there and party and hang out and, you know, up and down Harlem, man. And I think that's where him and Tyson had that street fight.
Mitch only listened to a few people in his life, man. Mitch was his own, you know, like I'm going to say, Mitch was his own worst enemy. You know what I'm saying? He was his own worst enemy.
Absolutely.
And like I told you before, Doc, about Hector Camacho at the same time. Camacho could have been one of the greatest fighters ever lived if he listened. But the fact is, like I said, people heard him, and he just went the other way.
Hector Camacho is still one of the greatest fighters, but you said the recognition because people forget that, you know, and I said this before, I said it a million times, you know, Hector's the only guy on his resume that can say he beat Duran and Ray Leonard, and even though he beat them past their prime, in his
way past their prime, Doc.
I don't care if they fought when they was in kindergarten. But Camacho would have beat both of them easy because that's how good Camacho was. He had a radar instinct.
Calm down. I'm going to tell you something.
I have to disagree. He might have beat outboxed Duran. But I don't think he would have beaten Sugar Ray.
He would have beat Ray Leonard easier than Duran.
Duran would have been the harder fight of the victory. Hector Camacho had the ability. I've said this, and Hector Camacho is the one guy that could have beat Ray and Duran. If they're both 22 years old, Camacho could have did it. Camacho was
You know why I say he wouldn't have beaten Sugar Ray? Because of weight class difference. Once he moved up, Camacho wasn't the same guy. He would have stayed where he was at his prime. He would have beaten anybody at that weight class. If he would have moved up to 147 to fight Ray Leonard.
I'm just talking about ability. My point is that Ray Leonard is a one-dimensional fighter. His whole thing, and that's what you guys are not looking at. I look at it all. Ray can only do jab, right hand, left hook. Once in a while, he might throw a left hook off a jab. But when you after that is done with, he's completely lost.
And the only
reason why he's able to beat guys is the guys are stationed in front. He had fast hands, and that's what made him go over on guys. But when a guy is moving his head and making Ray work more harder with off his combination, Ray is not going to do a lot of feinting and making clever moves on fighters. You will never see Ray do it because he doesn't think like that. He was never taught like that. And that's the reason why Ray could be beat so easy.
Look, see, the thing about Ray, too, and you know, the thing
that has come, Tommy was beating the dog out of him.
Yeah.
Tommy was beating him, and he changed and he switched game plans. I mean, the guy was a thinker in there. He wasn't a
dummy.
Yeah,
but you know what? Emmanuel told me the reason why that Tommy lost that fight against Ray, and everybody knows because Tommy ran out of gas. And Tommy ran out of gas because Tommy did not stick to the diet that Emmanuel told him to stick to.
Well, what diet was that?
I'm telling you what Emmanuel said. He said he didn't have
enough
to
say. What did you see? You saw a fighter get tired, right? What did you see when he fought Marvin Hagler? You saw a fighter get tired. What did you see when he fought Iron Barber? What did you see when he fought Harold Weston? You saw a fighter get tired.
He got tired because of pressure on Tommy Hearns. You're tired.
No question, Tommy.
But Harold always said that Tommy Hitman Hearns could be, he's one of the hardest hitters. But if you can last past five rounds,
I'm talking for one fight. We're not talking about a career. That's the one fight you thought. The night you throw the no hitter, you got everything rolling. Emmanuel felt that night, had Tommy stuck to the diet he put him on, he'd have had enough gas to go the distance. We know Tommy is not a distance guy. I'm talking about one night, one fight. I ain't talking about a career. Okay?
Mel, that is ridiculous. Because where was the diet, and all the fights when he did get tired after the fight?
I'm saying that night. What Emmanuel was saying at that time, I'm not saying you not saying. I'm trying to say maybe had he did whatever Emmanuel wanted that particular time, it would have worked that night. That's all.
Tommy is going to get tired no matter what fight he's in, what time of age he was. He's going to get tired because he doesn't know how to do it. And let you tell you a good secret. You're going to get tired in a fight if you're in the best shape of your life. It's how you deal with tiredness that makes you a great champion.
That's the question I want to bring up. How come, so what you're telling me, Harold, here, is that it's a matter of mentality. I mean, Ali was a guy that could go the distance. Shaver was a guy that got tired along the line. Tommy got tired along the line. Duran didn't. Hector didn't get. So you're telling me that it's a mental thing, Harold?
It is a mental thing. You get tired when you walk down the street or when you get up in the morning. Okay?
It's a mental thing that is controlled by your conditioning. I know when I was doing road work, man, I see guys running 2 miles. That's it. Every day, 2 miles. I run 2 miles, and 2 miles become like 2 feet. I said, well, hell, if I can do 2 miles that easily, let me do 3. And you challenge yourself to bring up that stamina.
I think it's a combination of conditioning and combination of a mental fortitude. I mean, I think Harold has a point there that how you deal with being tired makes a difference. You know what I mean? You deal with fear.
I mean,
Ray was tired too. Now Ray was tired too, but he dealt with it more better than Tommy did. That was the whole thing.
Exactly.
Don't think when Joe Frazier fought Muhammad Ali when they fought 15 rounds, they were tired too. They were tired. It's just how you deal with this situation.
It's like
football game last week. The Sea Wing said that the Bears lost, man. It was a rough, tough field. You know what I mean? The weather was bad. I said, where was the other team playing? Was it the Bears?
The fact of the matter is that you have to deal with your conditioning. You push yourself, you challenge yourself, and you challenge yourself.
But you know what? I have to say one more thing, though. How good conditioned you are gives you that ability to deal with how you deal with being tired. You know what I mean? If the condition is not there, then you can forget about it.
Yeah, you're right. Let me give you a certain instinct of something here. When you're training, it depends on how that conditioning is forming. If you're training at a slow pace and that's how you like to go, now I come in there with a fast pace, I'm going to take you out of your rhythm. You know what's going to happen? You're going to get tired because you ain't used to that pace that I'm setting.
Right.
And that's the whole key of the situation when you
The great line that Howard says, once the fatigue sets in, it's over.
And that's how I beat all those guys, because of the fact that I set a fast pace for round one.
And I know that everybody wants to pull out the first three, four rounds. Because of his pace, his condition, you know, didn't have that much skill, but was Vito Antifemo.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that was his victory. Vito could never win a championship fight here in the 12-round fight because he can't get you. He's got to get you in the last three or four rounds in a 15 round. That was his best. That was his best round because you're dead tired.
It's just like when you watch Margarito against Cotto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just kept putting that pressure, and Cotto was doing well the first six rounds, right? But then after that, he wasn't.
Right.
He was getting hit a lot more as the rounds went down.
A 15-round fight really made that interesting. And gentlemen, because we have got 20 minutes left, I got you guys talking boxing. This guy tonight, you can start this off, Cisco, and then we're gonna let Harold and Dusty come in. The rest of the panel.
Yeah, I gotta get on that too.
Everybody's talking about this kid.
What Harold said about pace is gonna directly affect the fight that you're about to speak tonight.
You started.
Broner's used to setting the pace, Doc. If you notice, in all of his fights, he is usually the pace setter of the fight. He fights at his own pace. He throws his combos at his own pace. I want to see, pardon me, the name escapes me, but the guy that he is fighting tonight, I will be anxious to see.
As Howard said,
the guy that he's fighting tonight tried to set a very fast pace to try to get Broner out of his comfort level and out of his rhythm. Because usually when Broner fights, if you notice, he usually establishes the pace.
Yeah, well, tonight he's fighting Antonio DeMarco. DeMarco comes in 28-2 with a draw with 21 knockouts. He's the lightweight champ. And Andre, he comes in at 24-0 with 20 knockouts. So pace is the key to this fight, you say, Rooney?
Well, it's going to be one of the keys, Doc. Like Howard said, I want to see, knowing that Broner usually sets the pace in his fights and establishes the pace, I want to see if DeMarco comes out trying to set a quicker, faster, more intense pace to see what effect that will have on the timing and bring generalship.
DeMarco is a fast starter. I've seen him fight three or four times, and he's a vicious body puncher. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's a southpaw.
Yes, he is.
And he's fast, and I've seen him destroy two or three other guys before. He's a fast starter.
You know what?
The Mexican fighters, I mean, I got to give them, the Mexican fighters, all the kudos in the world. It seems to me that they, from birth, they were trained to crap out of your body. All these Mexican fighters, last week, all I saw was Mexicans punishing bodies. They forgot that the opponent had a head, man. These guys will kill you with a body first. How much Adrian Broner, Floyd Mayweather can take to the body, it depends. Broner's a tough, fresh, super confident dude who wants to be another Mayweather. Okay, that's a foregone conclusion. But how this guy, DeMarco, can set the pace and push him into deep waters, it remains to be seen. To me, the most important fight, to me, not so much the main event, but it's Jonathan Banks and Seth Mitchell, two heavyweights. Seth Mitchell is the so-called rough diamond in the heavyweight ranks of the United States. Jonathan Banks, coincidentally, was an Emmanuel Stewart student who took over for Emmanuel Stewart when he was in the hospital and he had to train Klitschko for that fight that he won 2 weeks ago. So this kid has a lot going for himself. How good he's going to be against Seth Mitchell, we don't know. But getting back to Adrian Broner, this is an acid test for him, because this guy, DeMarco, in the fights that I've seen, this guy is a pusher and he comes after you. So, you know, we'll see. You know, he says, Broner says, well, I'll take the fights one day at a time. I know he's tough, but we'll see how he, you know. And plus the fact that Broner has not had challenges. He's fought Lipscow, was it Lipscow? And he
Jason
fought another, yeah, Jason, and he knocked him out in one round. Then he fought this guy recently, a guy named Caballero or something, and he knocked him. You know, he really hasn't been challenged since I've seen him 10 fights ago. You know, this is probably his biggest challenge.
I'm gonna say this. I don't think DeMarco beats Broner. There's a reason why they chose to fight DeMarco. DeMarco was actually losing against Linares and came back
as
Linares got tired.
Yeah.
He got dismantled by Edwin Valero. We forgot about that.
I think he's a decent Mexican fighter,
but he's not going to be Broner. Broner's going to be able to physically handle him. Well, I think he's also going to beat Broner. DeMarco is really the only difference with DeMarco is that he has this southpaw stance pretty much.
Yeah,
that's about it.
He's not a
typical Mexican fighter who just comes forward and throws a lot of punches. he's not a technical boxer. So. I think that when it comes to Broner, Broner's gonna do what he does best. You know, he's gonna be defensive. He's gonna pop shot him. He's gonna physically, and he looked good in the weigh-in. I mean, he looked physically, you know, he's filled out very well. He's filling up very well going up in weight. So
yeah, he's 35 pounds now.
I just don't see DeMarco. He's just gonna be another title for this kid Broner. I say this much: Ponce de León now gave Broner hell. Ponce de León
beat
Broner.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if there's a blueprint of being Broner, that you could probably go back to that fight.
Carlos Ponce de León, exactly. Yeah.
And, Seth Mitchell is not going to be the next great heavyweight. We're hoping and praying, lighting up candles, looking for the next great heavyweight champion of the world. It's not going to be Seth Mitchell, man. Forget about it.
No, I'm telling you, know, I didn't say he is going to be. I'm saying that he is.
He was a hopeful.
The dark
he was the guy that
we had nobody.
Harold Weston, as a matchmaker, we're talking about this fight tonight. How do you see this fight? Is it an evening match fight? Is this a guy that they've picked, sort of handpicked? And you as a matchmaker, Harold, were there times when you said, hey, no, I'm not making this fight? Did it happen, Harold?
My thing was I picked styles. I didn't go by records of guys and stuff like that. I picked styles and who trained the fighter. And basically, that's how I made my matches with my guy. I didn't even care if your guy was 100-0 with 100 knockouts. It didn't make no difference to me. You know, if your style was made for my guy, I will put you in there. And that was my way of making matches for guys and winning fights. And for him to develop himself, too, as a fighter. But today's time, you know, tonight Broner's getting his handpicked. He's getting the handpicked guy for himself, just like, you know, you guys are saying. The fact is that Broner is they wouldn't even take this fight if they thought that Broner could lose this fight. And and this guy's a Mexican. He's going to stay right in front of him. Broner's got pretty fast hands and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's just going to pick the guy off and everything. I mean,
and he's going to look impressive. He's going to look impressive,
and they're going to talk all, you know, wait, you're going to start yelling and screaming and all that, you know. But the fact is, Broner doesn't have, and I got said to you before, just like with Floyd
Nick.
Mayweather, they are a common copy of
Nick.
Mayweather Sr. and Floyd Mayweather, okay? There's nothing different about that. And both of them got beat when they were fighters, okay?
Right.
They guys invented that style that they got, these kids got, but really they can be beaten if you had the right, like you said, you got to have the trainers that knows how to beat these kind of guys, with that kind of style that these guys have.
Right.
And this is the
but,
thing that Cisco alluded to, and we've said 217 times, maybe 218 redundantly on this show. Everybody has said it, even C-Wings from a football standpoint of view. And it's just that it's sad and touching, as Harold Weston constantly says, a point well taken, as Rooney would dovetail on, is that, and you guys keep saying it, is that, these guys today are in the hands of people who have no clue, and
right.
You know, and a lot of, you know, and a lot of this now, you know, how good is Freddie Roach, Harold? And I know you told me you had a beef
no
with Freddie. Freddie did some backstabbing, and Freddie seems to be a guy that gets a lot of pub that's unmerited, and him being the complexion of the connection has been advantageous, Harold.
Well, I mean, Freddie, you know, he one thing I'm going to give Freddie one little credit for, he did change Manny Pacquiao around. Okay.
How?
That's the only claim.
Well, Manny was a straightforward kind of rough guy. He fought like the Mexicans did, because that was the way he was brought up when he was coming to California fighting all the time, and even in the Philippines. But the thing is, he pretty much turned that around by showing Manny he had to be a boxer and started moving and putting combinations together. And that was I got to give him credit for that. But for the things that he saying that he knows how to make a fighter better. Look at the kid that the kid that he had before the Jewish.
You mean Amir Khan? Amir Khan.
Yeah, Khan. Right. He couldn't do nothing with Khan. And Khan got good ability. Could be a great fighter. But they don't know how to teach him. They don't
what
know
the,
how to show him
what
a 3-4 punch combination.
Well, Harold, what do you see in him, and what does he have to be taught to elevate to this level of greatness?
Well, I mean, the thing with Khan is that he's got to have a more better stiffer jab. He's got to throw combinations from body to head. There's such thing as body head combinations that these guys don't do today.
Absolutely.
There's such things as knowing defense and counter off a guy's punches and make them pay for it. You know, they don't know nothing about that because they don't know how to do that. And the fact is that getting more leverage on his own punches. And that he doesn't have, and Khan has got ability. There's just certain guys that has ability, but you've got to have the right trainer to put that other knowledge into the kid's head to make him a better fighter.
Take it to the next level.
Khan left Freddie Roach because of that.
Roach
because of that. He went
That's something that Emmanuel Stewart. Touched on me when we spoke about trainers and the reason why boxing is in a state of you know,
there's
a state of thin. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He said that we don't have enough. Forget about trainers, teachers. There is not enough teachers in the sport of boxing, and that's the reason why the fighters look the way they do, and that's why you have these one-sided fights. Sometimes you see guys lose who shouldn't have lost. Who, you know, with these great records, and you go, oh my God, they lost to who? They lost to what? You know, this guy was undefeated, and he lost against a guy with 10 losses, you know?
Right.
And because of that, I mean, I'll tell you this much. One example I would say is Juan Manuel Lopez, all right? He loses to Salido, okay, who had how many losses? And this kid was undefeated. You know, this kid should not have lost to a guy from that stature, you know? But because. Because of his trainers, because he don't have a team that's able to develop this kid, you know. Besides the fact that he's gotten away with winning fights because he has big knockout power, you know, they never worked on a game plan. They never showed this kid how to box very well, how to be defensive, and none of that. So eventually, he ran into
the wall. The problem here is that if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. As long as Juan Manuel Lopez was undefeated.
And the fact is, Freddie Roach is only here because of Manny Pacquiao. If you take Manny Pacquiao away, who's Freddie Roach? You understand?
Nobody.
Exactly.
Well, Harold, here's a question, Harold. We got a good point. Okay, so how come people, they know you, Harold, okay? They know you as a matchmaker. They know you as a Golden Glove champion, as a world champion, a guy in the business. Saying to you, Dusty, you know, how come people are not coming to Justinio Lewis? How come people are not coming to Howard? How come people not coming to? I mean, they know you, they listen. How come they not asking you guys to help this infusion and bring boxing back to where it used to be, Harold, Dusty, Cisco?
Let me just say one word for me. I don't kiss nobody. You know what?
Dusty, is that good over you too, Dusty?
Well, in my case, and I did train amateurs, I think I told you that before. In my case, it would be like a military training camp. You do exactly what I'm teaching you. You do, in fact, I piggyback on the great, God bless him, Sid Martin. He told me to do things, and I didn't want to do them. Remember? He turned me from a southpaw to a right hander. He says, the next time I see you turn to a southpaw, you're out of the gym. That's the way I deal. You do, and you train, and when you're out of my sight, you have my philosophy in your brain. That means curfew. That means eating. That means taking care of yourself. But when you come,
my way or the highway.
My way or the highway.
Let me ask this one guy.
That's how I train these guys. And I got a kid. He got to the final of the gloves. And like I said, if I'm lying, I'm dying. He was robbed. But I wouldn't put up with attitudes. Guys come into the gym 2 days, and they were gone 3 days. I said, whoa, why? Oh, no, well, I have something else to do. I said, well, you know, I don't need you, man.
Your way to highway, what you got to do is what Dusty tells you. Now, go ahead, Rooney, you had a question? Yeah.
I got one for the fighters on the panel, Dusty and Harold.
Well, hold on, Rooney. Okay, Cisco, question to you. A guy like you, know the game, boom, boom. So, I mean, what's your, I mean, Harold's not kissing butt. Dusty's not kissing butt, and they're not going to listen. So why are people not coming to people like you?
The problem with boxing is that boxing is like Humpty Dumpty, you know. It fell off the wall, but to put it back together, it's not going to happen. There's so many chiefs and Indians in boxing that everybody wants power. Everybody wants to be the man in boxing, but nobody wants to really fix the sports infrastructure. You know, nobody's going in there and saying, okay, you know, nobody's seeing the bigger picture. They're even saying, okay,
everybody,
we have a lack of trainers.
Let's start creating trainers.
Exactly. With fighters today, they don't develop fighters anymore. Like Harold Weston said, they don't develop fighters anymore. You don't see that. You don't see, when you see a guy coming out of the Olympics, you know, when you saw Pernell Whitaker or Oscar De La Hoya or Sugar Ray Leonard coming out of the Olympics, these guys were smashing the competition from their first pro fight. You know, these guys now, you know, they come out of the Olympics and you go, what? These guys were actually in the Olympics? You know?
Yeah.
You understand? Right. When you saw the Olympics, when we talk about not winning any gold medals and stuff like that, when you saw guys in the Olympics, they were beating the crap out of these European fighters or these Russian fighters or these, you know, they were smashing the competition. You didn't have to go and judge these fights because they were getting wrecked. You do not see that today. You understand? In the amateur program. You understand what I'm saying?
Let me get my question
in just quickly, okay, Doc? My question is to Harold, Dusty, the fighters on the panel, and, of course, Cisco. My question is this. A former fighter who knows the game and who seems to be pretty good to us non-professionals here. I want, however, to the guys who box, Howard and Dusty, where would you rate somebody like Buddy McGirt on a training scale? Where would you rate him as a trainer?
You want me to leave? Diplomatic or undiplomatic?
Hold on. We're running out of time. What does I want to do here? Hold on a second, because I want this done. Rooney, close us out. We'll do a quick minute, mic on, lights off. Close us out here, and we'll come back. And that's the question we're going to have with the mic on, lights off. How good is Buddy McGirt as a trainer? Harold Weston Jr. will tell you, no punches pulled. Dusty will tell you, and so will...
Also, he was on the show a few times, too.
Dusty was my man. One time, he's the best welterweight in the world. Great friend. Real quickly, Rooney, close us out.
Of course, Doc, no problem. The Sports in Depth Nation's been here. The Sports in Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network, and the straw that stirs the drink has been here, and that is the incomparable Dr. Stanley. Thank you, good doctor.
Thank you, Rooney. Okay, what we're going to do, got a couple of minutes here, so what I don't know, we'll go mic on, lights off real quick, and then we'll close out with that question on the mic on, lights off with Dusty. Got some things to do. Remind you that we're going to have that universal verb screening, universal babe screening today by our good buddy Byron Hunter. But Larry Hardison, we'll close it. We'll come back in a second. Mic on, lights off. Larry, you got something to say?
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. on SAR.
Doc Stanley. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. Mic on, lights off, here we come. Rooney, bring us on.
Our Sports in Depth Nation is back. Our Sports in Depth panel is back. we have Sports In Depth Extra, Mike Son, Lights Off, and the great Doc Stanley is here. Take it away, Doctor.
Thanks a lot for the kind words. Donnie Hathaway, say something. Okay, don't say anything. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the Trust in God Radio Network. Mike on Lights Off, and we're back. The question, we another good 2 minutes here. And we talked about great trainers, the lack of great trainers, the loss of great trainers. And the question is, by Mel Smith Jr., how good is Buddy McGirt? Harold Weston will kick it off. Buddy McGirt is a trainer, Harold.
It depends on what time, where you want to put him. For today's time, he's a B. In the other era, he would be a D.
Why? Why, Harold?
Because his whole strategy is one-dimensional. You got to understand, I look at guys and train. That's what I told you earlier. I said I look at fighters and see who trains them and what the fighter does, how if the fighter is a disciplined fighter. And that's how I match my guys up. My point is that majority of guys, it's like this, Mel. When you go to school, you learn certain things in school, right? And when you leave that school or graduate out of school, you remember what you did in that school. Now, you come into the real world, they got all kinds of other things going on. But you didn't learn that in school. So all you can do is do what you learned in school. And that's what happens with Buddy. Buddy's only going to train a fighter the only things that he knew how to do when he was a fighter.
Right.
Majority of all the trainers is doing the same thing. Is that they doing the same thing that they did as a fighter to teach the fighters that they have. So that's why I said these trainers today are very much one-dimensional way. And as long as you know what they're dimensional way, you got them beat. And that's the whole key. That's what's so great about Gil Clancy and Sid Martin and all my father
Ray
and all those guys. It was a whole
different.
You learn something every day.
Yeah.
Right.
But Harold, is there any truth to the fact, though, that he did change and advance and aid the career of Gotti?
Yeah, I mean, you know, let me show you a good point. That was Buddy McGirt.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Wow.
Really? You know what I'm going to say
Buddy
about Arturo
Gatti
too?
Body.
Arturo Gatti
was... Hold on. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. That reminds me of a quote that I happened to come up with the other day, that sometimes the obvious is unseen and the unseen is quite clear. God dog, Harold. Go, Cisco.
And Arturo Gatti was also matched very well on his comeback with Buddy McGirt. They put the right guys in front of him. You saw what happened once they put him against an elite fighter like Floyd Mayweather. He was never in that class. You know, he was world champion again. He was looking great. You understand? Because he had those fights with Mickey Ward. How many losses did Mickey Ward have? You know, they just matched him up with the right guys, made him look good, made fights of the year. But once he stepped up to the next level, he was not even in that class. You know, so matchmaking definitely was. I have to say something too about the about trainers and stuff like that. All you have to do today is go back and watch the old fights, the old fighters, the old great fighters. You know, and then just watch fights today. You'll see a lot of things that's missing out of the sport. You know, the art of the left jab is gone. Head movement is gone. Parrying, great balance. You know, a guy being able to finish another guy. You don't see these things. What you see is you see guys falling into each other. A lot of clinching, a lot of hugging, a lot of, you know, a lot of mauling.
Grabbing.
You don't see exactly. You don't see a boxing masterpiece like you used to see back in the days. And when you saw a super fight back in the days, they were super fights. You see super fights today, they're one-sided beatings. So, you know, all you have to do is go back. If you're a student of the game, go watch the old fights, come back and watch fights today, and you see it's like night and day, you know?
Yeah, can I ask our question? How about Ronnie Shields as a trainer?
I mean, Ronnie is, you know, with today's time, you know, he's a B trainer. I mean, you know, basically, Ronnie's going to do Ronnie. Ronnie's not going to show you no more than what Ronnie knows in his head what he did as a fighter. And
right.
So basically, that's what you got of Ronnie Shields. I mean, to take a fighter, let me just give you an example. Take a fighter and show him how to be several things, okay? And these are the several things that you can be in boxing. You can be a counterpuncher. You can be a boxer. You can be a slugger, okay? Yeah. And the thing is that, and the thing is that for you to teach your fighter to do those three or four methods of style, okay, is very hard because of the fact that that fighter's got to adjust his body weight. He's got to adjust his leg movement. He's got to do a whole lot of things to make all those, to carry all those type of styles and know how to do it. And that's the reason why I said there's a lot of fighters that their trainers are one-dimensional, and they only can teach that one way because that's the only way they were taught. But when you got a fighter that can, you can adjust and say, okay, stop slugging, man. Now box the guy. All right? Now stop box, counterpunching. You can't get fighters to do that today because the trainers don't know how to do it.
Exactly.
They don't know how to do it. You can talk it. They can read it, but they don't know how to do it because some of those techniques, you got to stand there and watch the punches come and slip the punch to get to do what you need to do to a guy. Fighters and trainers do not know how to do that today. And that's what that's what the excitement of the sport has left.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole thing. Dick Young told me a long time ago, God bless him, he said to me one time, he said, Harold, when your era is over, boxing is finished. He said, because you're not going to have the great talent of fighters because the trainers are not going to be here no more. Dick Young told me that way back before he died.
And that's exactly my time, or is everybody talking? So, go ahead.
Trainer to me is a strategist. You know, he figures out, you know, what's his fighter's best tools, and he creates a game plan for him, you know, regardless of what fight he's going to take. You know, and that's what you don't see. You don't see strategists. You don't see a guy with an A, B, and C game plan. You just see a guy with an A game plan and don't know what to do after that. And you see it. You see it in fights. You see it in the corner when these guys go back to their corner. They don't get the right instructions, you know. It's really like they're just there to just give them water, give them some BS instruction, and just push them onto the
and be
their cheerleader.
Yeah, exactly. Like a jockey, a racehorse, you know.
with Buddy McGirt, like everybody else has said, And I piggyback on Harold. A fighter has to be multiple dimension. Yeah, I'm right. He has to know when, as the fight progresses. That's one of the key things that with Floyd Mayweather. When I talk to him a lot about what you're going to do, and he talks this nonsense about, well, I'm going to slug and I'm going to do this and I'm going to stand in the middle of the ring, and then you see him do totally the opposite because that's his strength. That's his strength. He's gonna maneuver you into the center of the ring, and if he throws 15 punches around, he knows that he scored 15 points, and that's it for him. He's not gonna slug with you. Now,
you know,
he said also, I don't study film. Why should I? I don't know what the guy's gonna give me as opposed to what he gave the other opponent that I'm watching. So I don't mind losing a round just to see what this guy has. Once I know what he has, then I'll adjust to it. And that's basically what a man makes him successful. Now, in terms of boxers, trainers today, you're right. They make their bones. They make their bones with one champion, and that makes them great trainers. No, it's not. The Freddie Roaches. He made his bones with Pacquiao. Now, everybody flocked towards Freddie Roach because he had this great Pacquiao. But Pacquiao is a fighting machine that he was
Think about this. Joe Calzaghe's father.
Right. And the fact of the matter is that Buddy McGirt, yes, he took a rough Gotti, gave him a jab. In fact, here's an example of what I'm saying about a fighter improving. Marcos Maidana, did you guys see him fight about a month ago?
Yeah.
Marcos Maidana is an animal. He throws punches from left field, right field, center field, and home base. The Garcia brothers gave him a jab. I said, wait a minute, is this the Marcos Maidana that I'm used to? The man boxed, and he had a tremendous piston-like jab beating his opponent. Whether his opponent was good, bad, or indifferent, Marcus Maidana was a brand new Marcus Maidana.
It wasn't the guy in front of him, it was the guy that had been made.
It was one fight.
Hold on, fellas, you can't say he's a brand new fighter for one fight.
You know what I mean?
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay, he used the left jab, but if you look at that fight, his punch got him out of that fight. He was able to hurt Toto
Peraza.
That's how he got out of that fight.
Okay? Turned him around and made him a boxer. I'm not saying he's
going to
fight the
same way. Nah, he was no boxer. He was still getting hit a lot.
Knock it off.
Come on, here we go.
Hold tight. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Hey, you know, you
I kind of wish we had a television so we could watch that fight and sit down and talk about this great boxer.
The man was jabbing. He was jabbing. It was a different fight.
Maidana did.
That doesn't mean that the man is going to fight that way all the time. We were talking about trainers. Well, what trainers do for a fighter to improve their fighters?
There's the point made, Dusty. There's the point made. Whether he's changing or not, the fact that he's added something else to his repertoire.
This is what I'm trying to say. He's not going to fight the same way. I don't know. But he has a new dimension. This is what a trainer's all about.
And you know what, too, Dusty?
It's what
you and Howard always say, too. The willingness of these guys to learn. I mean,
Howard just made a great point
about Mitch Budglien. Just the lack of discipline. Gentlemen, we got to run. We'll be back here tomorrow. Doc Stanley Sporting Depth on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Three thoughts. Live your life today and then stand before God tomorrow. Life's most insistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others and to make you pay for your space here on Earth. Rooney, tell everybody sayonara.
The Sports and Depth Nation's been here. The Sports and Depth panel's been here. We thank you for joining us with this edition of Sports and Depth Extra. I'm Mel Smith Jr.
She's coming.
The Trust in God Radio Network has been responsible for this broadcast. And the straw that stirred the drink's been here, the great Doc Stanley. Thank you, good doctor.
Thanks, Rooney. And he may not be a store breaker, but he will shake it and will make it not stir. Dusty, tell him good night in Spanish.
He's tongue tied.
Dusty. Have we lost Dusty? Dusty left us?
I guess you must have pissed him off.
Well, then Cisco.
You must have stirred his drink.
All the way. I got the house still with us. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Cisco, tell everybody good night in Spanish, would you?
Good night in Spanish. Buenas noches.
There it is. And with that, Donnie Hathaway will let us know that the Christmas season is coming. We're going to close out. That great Christmas song by Howard Hewitt, The First Noel. And we'll be back here tomorrow, 11:30, Sunday Sports Wrap. Doc Stanley and the Posse saying from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Gentlemen, tomorrow night. Until then, may the good Lord bless and keep you till we meet again.
Bye. Bye-bye. Night.
Later.
Night. Good night. Good night. On a cold winter's night.
No! tree how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, fireside blazing bright.